Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Doing well, doing great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Shout out to all you dunkers out there. Thank you for embracing your bounce. We are back. Blessed to be alive. It's always a blessing. Count your blessings while you can. What's up, Nikias?
There we go. How's the weekend?
It was cool. How was yours?
Also cool. A lot of hoop. Can't go wrong with that.
No, you can't. Big question for you. How did you once again get packed up over the weekend, this time by the Philadelphia 76ers fan base?
It's becoming a running bit at this point. So I was watching Sixers-Cavs. And we'll get into this. I guess that would be a natural segue to get into the game. But at any rate, I'm watching Sixers-Cavs. And I'm watching the first half of this game, and specifically how Cleveland was defending Philadelphia and what the half-court offense looked like in that game. And I was just like, my first thought was like, if I'm Philly, I probably don't want to deal with this in round one, if that's the thing that could happen. And so I was going to tweet, I wouldn't want to see Philly. I mean, I wouldn't want to see Cleveland in round one. And I was like, nope. Because I feel like if I just tweet it like this with no added context, people are going to jump down my throat thinking that Cleveland is just a world beater or something. And they're going to think it's Philly hate. So let me put this disclaimer in the tweet to make it clear that I am not slandering Philly, but more so saying that Cleveland just seems like an annoying matchup. And so I did that, and the tweet went about as well as you expected it to. So just another day at the office.
Yeah, they served you a nice to-go plate. You just hitting all the Eastern Conference right now.
Like, I just don't know. I don't know what to do.
Might as well call you Goldberg. Who's next?
You know what? Fine.
I did have a question for you. Hashtag is big apology. Trying out a new segment here. Trying to flex my game here. Who's first for you? Who is? DeMarcus Cousins scored 31 points. Yeah. Get an apology for him.
Well, we talked about Denver on the last pod. I said he's been playing well.
That's
I said I like the way he's been.
Jason Tatum had a 50 piece. Lemon pepper spicy, I think, is what the kids say. But I apologize.
I already acknowledged that he's been playing well. What's happening here?
Spencer Dinwiddie went off this weekend.
Uh-huh.
Is he on the list for apologies?
Spencer Dinwiddie is playing well in Dallas. Can't confirm.
LaMarcus Aldridge playing some drop defense on national TV.
Is he on the list? How did that end for him?
DeAndre Jordan doing his job in Philadelphia.
I haven't watched that game yet, so I can't speak to DJ yet. All I've seen is the clip that you tagged me in.
Jay Crowder run pick and roll.
Jay Crowder did do some things in the Milwaukee game. That was fun.
Is Glenn getting an apology?
So far, so good for Glenn Rock from Glenn Rivers. I must say,
this man will not apologize.
I'll give him props what props to do. I don't know what you want from me. When we first talked about Philly post trade, I was mid compliment, and then you cut me off out of pure shock that I was given the compliment, and now here we are again. You are asking for a Doc Rivers apology.
I was trying to get you fired up in warmups.
Is this what the layup line is?
Pretty much.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Cool. Okay. Briefed on Cleveland a little bit earlier. Jared Allen looks like he's going to be out for a while. Suffered an injury during the Raptors game on Sunday. Any concern at all for Cleveland moving forward?
It's not ideal. The timing is not good. They're trying to hang on to that top six spot, fight for positioning. Jared Allen is a huge piece of what they do. We've seen Cleveland fight injuries what feels like almost all year long with a piece or two being out. They've been able to replicate their success. So I guess if you're saying concern, I don't think this takes away what they want to do or what they can do. They'll probably just slide, give you some more Ed Davis, maybe some more Dean Wade. And continue their multiple big deal. But it stinks because you want to see this team handle this kind of adversity. You want to be able to see what they look like with Allen, with LeVert, see how this team grows and make this push really count. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm I think they've exceeded expectations with what they've done so far. You just want to be able to see exactly what they have and know, okay, this is the next step we need. And kind of having to fight some of these bumps and bruises is great to overcome adversity, but it also makes it tough to know, what do we really have? What's the next step for us?
I got you. Like, it's, this is very like take the wind out of the sails for me. Like, I agree with you that Cleveland has exceeded pretty much all reasonable expectation, especially looking at like preseason takes and stuff. Like, I'm not sure. The optimistic view would have been like, hey, they could be in the play-in. And they've been an elite defense all year long, or I guess up until this most recent stretch. But they've been good. Like, it just kind of stinks that, like you said, we don't get to see the full assortment. Like, I am curious to see what this means for Evan Mobley. He's going to, I would assume that he's going to take on a lot more responsibility on both ends now. Because great as he's been defensively, like having Jared Allen beside him slash behind him certainly helps a little bit. And even offensively, like if he's running some pick and roll with Darius Garland, like having Jared Allen as a guy in the dunker spot to throw some lobs to, think that helps. So I think we're going to see more of Evan Mobley at the five. I just want to see what that looks like on both ends. Not that he can't do it, but I think we're going to get an extended stretch of this at this point.
Yeah, are you ready for Mobley, Kevin Love, Lauri Markkanen lineups?
A little more spacing. I don't know what that does to the defense. I have a guess, but I'm curious at the very least.
That guess is unfair, and I've seen them defend too many pick and rolls to go that route. Probably a lot of Okoro drives.
Yeah, like I don't think it's an insult to say like more Kevin Love minutes is probably going to be worse defensively than having Jared Allen out there. He's an all defensive team candidate. That's all.
No. That's, of course, no one would say that.
But I'm just saying, that's why.
There's not a soul on earth that would say that. You know what? Never mind.
You said the shot was unfair. That's all I'm saying. It's going to probably be a dip.
No, I've seen the defended pick and rolls together, and I was shocked that it worked. So.
I got you.
This is going to be one of those pods.
What do you, what does that even mean?
3-star review coming for Steve. Let's go.
There's not going to be a 3-star review. Nothing but 5 stars from our dunkers out there. On a positive injury note, Victor Oladipo is back.
Boy, is he ever.
Made his debut, was on a 15-minute restriction. Jesus, say that 10 times fast. At any rate, He looked pretty solid. We were talking a little bit before the show. I did not see Bulls Sixers tonight. I'll have to check that out tomorrow, or I guess Tuesday, whenever the listeners hear this. I was watching Heat Rockets. And in 15 minutes for Victor Oladipo, gave you 11 points, 4 assists, knocked down some threes, drew 2 charges, which, hilarious, he checks in within the first 10 seconds. He draws a charge. I was like, okay, here's the tone setter. I was intrigued by the usage. There's a lot of off-ball stuff early on. Setting some screens, kind of spacing, lifting from the corner to the wing, off-ball. He was in the lineup with, I believe it was Tyler Hero and Kyle Lowry on the court with him. So he's the 3, if you want to call him that. Not a lot of primary reps, mostly off-ball. The burst looked pretty solid. And then the second half came, they let him run some pick and roll, and he didn't look bad. Made some nice passes, hit Bam on a slip on an empty corner pick and roll. Bam drew a foul there. Highlight for him, Miami goes to a Spain pick and roll early in the fourth quarter. Houston does a good job of switching it, and it basically turns into an ISO for Victor Oladipo. Faced with fake stuff against David Nwaba, I believe who it was. Nwaba defended him well. Oladipo creates some separation with a step back, pump fakes, draws a foul there. I'm like, okay, got some stuff going. A little bit later, it's an empty corner pick and roll with Bam, drives by, gets a dunk. I must say, for 15 minutes, like, I'm not sure you could ask for much better than what I saw. I will say it's intriguing that we saw no Max Strus minutes and no Gabe Vincent minutes. So I still very much have rotation questions. But, solid return for him.
Well, number one, it's just good to see him back on the floor, overcoming another adversity. I'm glad he was able to have that moment. I was glad he was able to get those chants from the Heat crowd, which I didn't even notice until like the second time they did it.
Oh, they were very happy.
Oh, they were excited. Felt bad that he got the chance at the free throw line, then missed the free throw. But hey, that happens.
Yeah, can't have that.
But I liked what I saw. I guess I'll ask this question. How did you feel about the off-ball reps? Do you feel like that was more easing him back in? Do you feel that was more, hey, Hero's in a flow, we have Lowry on the court as well? Do you think it was trying to just see what that looks like? What were your thoughts?
I feel like it was more easing him back in because the usage, there was a definite shift in his usage from the first half to the second half. Because in the first half, like, he really only got to handle, you know, off of an immediate outlet after a defensive rebound, or the initial action in the half court happens and then the ball finds him and then he's asked to create and then move it again. Second half, they just let him do some stuff. And I would imagine at least part of that was, okay, Houston's not making anything anymore. Now we have a lead versus trying to come back. And so now we have some leeway to let you kind of do some things. But that was kind of my read on it. I want to see what it looks like moving forward, though. Like, it was nice to see him knock down some threes. Defenses were, I mean, it's Houston, but like, they weren't terrified of him out there. More of a soft closeout type ordeal. So I wonder, once they face tougher competition, I want to see how he's going to be defended, how quick his trigger is going to be at from out there. And depending on how to defend him, if they're going to shift to more on-ball stuff with him.
And I think the shift to the three-guard lineup is interesting just because you have multiple guys who can handle, multiple guys who can space, you can get into a flow, guys who can create their own offense and also kick. So I think it gives them some variety. With Oladipo, for me, off ball, it's going to be, where's he placed? Where's he spaced? How are teams treating him? Are you giving teams an outlet? Or is this just kind of coming out of the flow? Can he knock down enough shots in that area? Will he beat some closeouts? Those kind of things. But I'm not going to judge him on that quite yet. As far as on ball goes, the burst was a little bit more than I expected. I did not expect the play you mentioned where he did two in and outs and got a dunk getting past Jayshon Tate. Like, that's not like a fluff defender. Mm-hmm. So to come back first day back and do that, I was like, interesting. But I thought that was an important moment for him to show off that burst, show off the ability to drive. So I think we saw a little bit more shiftiness. He did the Dwayne Wade Memorial pump fake, draw a foul.
Yes.
So he's really ingrained in Heat culture. Two charges in 8 minutes is hilarious.
just very much on brand.
Yeah, it's great. But I think, hey, he gives them some lineup versatility. You can do some different things with the bench unit. And again, it's not like they need him to do more than be himself. I think that's a positive for both sides. So even in this scenario, you might not think that, you know, 11 and 15 minutes might not be the biggest thing, but that's positive contribution. And he's got a reputation. That's someone that teams are going to respect and defend. And you're adding that to what you already have. Mm-hmm. And I was a little intrigued that Gabe Vincent took the hit. But I do wonder if that was also more because Lowry was back.
Yeah.
As well, just because to get him some more minutes, I'm not sure, though. But we'll see going forward. Yeah, it seems like not a good time to be Struce, though.
Yeah, like that always felt like the kind of natural guy to lose minutes once Oladipo came back. Like, that's a stupid point by you. Like, Lowry also being back in the lineup at the same time. Not a surprise that it affected Gabe Vincent's minutes. Was a bit of a surprise that, again, like, just didn't see them. So I don't know. I'm curious to see what those minutes are going to look like.
Well, hey, that's a luxury I don't think many thought Miami would have at this point in the season.
Yeah.
When you looked at their bench in the preseason, where now, how do we get all these guys to play? Because if you look at the guys that played 3 minutes in this game, Highsmith, Yurt7, Vincent, Kyle Guy, Max Strus, guys have all contributed at some point this season.
That's pretty true. Also, quick shout out to Haywood Highsmith getting a 3-year deal earlier today for Adrian Wojnarowski.
Ultimate Heat player.
He hashtag hustles. No, I'm intrigued by the signing. But yeah, actually, while we're on the Heat-Houston game, can I just say Jalen Green looking pretty darn good post-All-Star break.
Is this the same Jalen Green you did not vote into the Rising Stars Challenge?
I didn't have him, no. You know, if he looked like this in the first half of the season, then he absolutely would have made it for me. But yeah, he's a rookie. Like, I've seen the comparison on the timeline quite a bit tonight in particular. Like, it's kind of Anthony Edwards-esque, where first half of the year, trying to find themselves, very aggressive, still trying to figure out what shots are good ones, which ones aren't. And then in the second half, we saw what Anthony Edwards looked like. Post All-Star break, Jalen Green looks, again, phenomenal. Getting downhill more and more decisive, more poison pick and roll. The shot-making flashes are already there in terms of the jumper. So now he's mixing all this other stuff in. And he lit Miami up in the first quarter of this game. Got Bam out of bio on the switch multiple occasions. Rained down threes in his face on multiple occasions. It's fun. It was fun.
Well, and to me, this is why the reps are so important for a young player. You know, if you try and put them in a box this early and project what they could be or what they may be or what they might not be, especially in this scenario, let him play. Mm-hmm. Let him get the reps in pick and roll. Let him get the reps off ball. Take the lumps. Because now, as the season progresses, you can kind of narrow the focus. Those reads may become crisper. The offense may become smoother. Everything you're saying may start to sink in, and you see that progress. It's not going to be linear. Like, so many times, in life, not just in basketball, we expect like this linear progress. It's just going to be up and down. And it's going to be how high can you go? How low can you go? Can you get back to the middle? And I think for Jalen Green, he's shown over the course of the year, maybe not the consistency you would want, but you're getting development. You're getting improvement. You're getting more drives, more consistent drives, taking better shots, more quality shots. You're just getting more of the good than you had earlier, and that's what you want to see at the end of the day.
There we go. All right, let's move into some teams that have caught our eye. Can I throw a quick one at you?
Yes.
With a 5-2 record since the All-Star break, the Detroit Pistons winning some games right now.
Now the Pistons want to show up.
They did not make the preseason tape. Hasn't rocked.
No, it hasn't. But Sadiq Trey is back. So
I have enjoyed the progression of Sadiq Bey this year. Could not make any sort of three to begin the year. But since that cold stretch, the jumper's fallen for him. The post game is nasty. We've seen some pick and roll usage for him. Not great, but I am pro expand your guy. Let him see what he can do, especially on a team like this. So I've enjoyed that portion of it. Shout out James Edwards of The Athletic, who wrote a piece this morning on Cade Cunningham's proficiency in the mid-range. The pull-up is coming for him. We've talked about this on the pod in terms of what the drives have started to look like since the beginning of the year. The three-point shot is there. Like, Cade is looking like the reason he went number one this year. We knew what he could do as a playmaker. The drives are there. The pull-up is now there. Defensively, he's been sound just about all year long. And so watching him put everything together has been fun. Marvin Bagley is doing things on offense at the very least. As a finisher, as a rebounder, the shot's been hit or miss, but that's kind of been in line with what he's been. But I've enjoyed the pick and rolls between him and Cade, the pick and rolls between him and some of the backup guards. I just want to give a quick head nod to Detroit real quick.
I like it. I like the energy. I like Bagley doing things. Jeremy Grant still feels like in a weird place with this team.
Yeah.
We could save that for a different day. I like what Bagley has brought to the table. I still wish they had some different lineups. Because I feel like Cade with another point guard makes sense on paper, but also on the court.
It's that Corey Joseph and Killian.
Well, no, it's like it's either that person's in pick and roll and why, or they're just a spacer. But Pistons are more fun to watch. I will say that.
It's about time. Oh, I guess on the injury note, get well soon, Isaiah Stewart. Which, man, what a year it's been for him. It's just been such a weird season for him. And it's funny, like heading into the pod as I was doing some prep, like I wanted to highlight him because one of the major factors of Detroit being on this stretch post All-Star break is that they have been the second best offensive rebounding team in the NBA post All-Star break. And Isaiah Stewart was averaging over 5 offensive rebounds per game. And so, of course, he plays 9 minutes tonight. Hurts the knee, I believe, is what it was. And so I hope he's able to get right because he's kind of the young core, at least. Like, him and Killian Hayes. Killian Hayes is the question mark. But beyond that, and we've talked about this on the pod before, year one, hey, look at all the things that Isaiah Stewart can do in addition to the rebounding and the motor. And in year two, it's, hey, where did most of this stuff go? So I hope he's able to round back into form. I hope the injury isn't too serious. But yeah, quick shout out to Detroit. As for the team I really wanted to highlight in this, the New Orleans Pelicans. They are incredibly fun right now.
They are very fun. Do you think they are quietly making some noise?
This feels like a trap. I don't know if they're quietly making noise, especially what they did to Utah over the weekend. But they are playing very well. Brandon Ingram continues to be phenomenal. True all-star talent in this league. CJ McCollum is fitting in just fine at point guard. A point that you've made on this pod, the Pelicans have been able to find ways to blend CJ, Brandon Ingram, and JV together in the half court. Get those guys flowing together. They have been a Chicago heavy team in terms of set actions. Being able to get CJ McCollum downhill for pull-ups, being able to get Brandon Ingram downhill. And if the defense makes a wrong move, that's a kick out or it's a dump off to JB. And he's finishing just about everything at the rim at this point. Herb Jones is flying all over the place defensively. Najee Marshall is back in the rotation. It's just nice to see him back out there. Year one, like he was one of the bright spots for New Orleans with the way that he defended, the way that he's filling the gaps offensively. Start the year this year, and he's nowhere to be found, and for good reason, because he wasn't playing well. That and, again, the revelation that is Herb Jones popping into the lineup. You didn't really need what Najee Marshall was bringing. So nice to see him getting some run during this time. Devontae Graham knocking down some threes for you. Still not getting to the rim, but you need him for the shot making. He's providing that. How have you felt about New Orleans defense?
I've actually loved their activity defensively. I know that was a question mark or concern when the deal came, but Willie Green has given them a base to work with. And the key for them during this stretch has been the rotations behind it, the activity and the effort they've displayed. You know, the thing about defense is we get really heavy into scheme talk sometimes. But you can have mistakes. You're going to make mistakes defensively. Can you respond? Can you react? You don't want to always be in rotation, but can you execute when you are? And you see when you watch the Pelicans on a kick out, good X outs. You know, ball goes to the corner, rotating from the wing right there. They're taking the extra pass, and now we reset. You're seeing that kind of activity, getting into the ball, switching when they need to, if they go 1-4, helping each other early and recovering. Like, having Herb Jones helps, but you also see it when they have Alvarado and Graham. Like, there's an activity to this team that really should get some credit. I'd love to see that base that they have. Now, of course, the timing, not so great. I think Denver scored however many points they scored on them last time they played, but it's more positive than I believed it would be. I think that's been a big impact for them, especially the way they were able to be active against Utah. That was a big defensive game for them where I was impressed. They didn't always get the stop, but you could kind of see the process behind it, and that's just as important. Because if you can lay that kind of foundation, you're going to give yourself a shot more times than not.
Utah game in particular was key because a lot of their stops just they were able to blitz them in transition pretty early in that one. And so that's also positive. We talk about what they're able to do in the half court. Again, they have shot makers in CJ McCollum. They have Brandon Ingram. They have JV they can dump it down to if necessary. When you're able to have those, we have that kind of three-headed monster in the half court, and then you're able to get just a bunch of easy buckets in transition as well. Like, it's an avalanche at a certain point, and that's what it felt like that Utah game was.
Yeah, I'd agree there, and I'd give Willie Green another hat tip for knowing his guys, knowing his personnel. The CJ Ingram Valanciunas trio is such an intriguing blend of talent where you might have a question mark on how it might work, but it really does. Like, the blend of those three is really good. The main thing to me is you can use JV in so many different ways in the post to score, in the post to run actions, as a hub for dribble handoffs, trailer, flow into pick and roll, cross screens. Like, you can just, he's a good base to work around. Mm-hmm. You have Ingram, who we know can play on ball and not just as a scorer now. He's a guy who can make reads. He's dipping his toes into bending defenses. So that gives you a plus. And you have CJ, who can initiate offense. He can cut. He can play off ball, come off screens. He can finish plays as well, mm-hmm. which I think is very important for New Orleans because organically, you run your set. Maybe it breaks down. Maybe it doesn't work. It's not even a save us, CJ. It's just the ball swings to him. And now you have to deal with that as well. Mm-hmm. Or vice versa if it's Ingram at the end. So just, you know, the way they've run the dribble handoff action, left the corner empty and said, you got to deal with one of these guys coming downhill, JV rolling and a potential skip. Like, it's just like, you have to figure that out. That's been fun. But you know what? Before I get to Brandon Ingram, how about Jackson Hayes?
I was literally about to ask you about Jackson Hayes.
He's been fun at the four. And, you know, defensively, I think he's held his own in a way that maybe we didn't think would be possible after some of the things he's shown, but offensively at the four, him being spaced has kind of worked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the drives from the perimeter have caught me off guard. Teams are helping off of him, which makes sense, but then they are also getting beat off the dribble by him, which kind of defeats the purpose of that. There's a lot of plays where he starts in the corner and he cuts to get a rebound, or defense helps on a JV roll and he's cut to the basket for a lob. Those little things are key for me. So I've enjoyed him playing at the four. I think that works for this team to give them that size, to give them multiple options. And then I think it low key, very low key, gives you a base for what it could look like with redacted plays basketball again.
That's a good point. Like, watching Jackson, especially early on defensively, I'm just like, okay, I see what the tools are supposed to be. I know what the potential is. He absolutely can't anchor a defense. He just can't do it right now. Too young, needs more reps, needs to have better feel, like whatever. Like, he just isn't ready. So like, in a vacuum, it's like, okay, it'd be cool if he could just be a help side guy. Who do you place alongside him though? That makes sense of both ends. Did not foresee him and JV getting a bunch of minutes together, especially in a starting unit, but it has worked. As you mentioned, the fact that you can use JV in a bunch of different ways allows Jackson Hayes to chill in the corner and then cut, chill in the slot and then cut, hang in the dunker spot if you're playing JV higher up on the floor. And it all works. Like, him being spaced beyond the three-point line has surprised me, but it also kind of makes sense because he does have enough ball skills to where, I mean, he just needs a dribble or two if you do hit him on a cut. And he is a 99th percentile athlete. So if you're giving him that kind of launching pad, helping golf is not always a great idea. Not because he can shoot, because we have no idea if that's going to become a thing for him consistently. But again, you give him that kind of a runway. If you do help off, if you're not back in time to cut him off and draw some charges, you're in trouble. He's dunking on your head or he's getting to the free throw line. And so that has been fun. And thank you for bringing up the template because that was a point that I was going to make. You can use redacted in a lot of the same ways with more ball handling, of course, like he's better. But like, that's going to, I think, the transition to getting him back in there, whether that's towards the end of this season or next season, like the skeleton is there. I don't think it's going to be a difficult process to incorporate him into the offense because you're already seeing what the usage can look like at the four.
Yeah, I think the only thing would probably be, the only question mark would be, how do you fit his on-ball reps into it? But then again, if he's involved in the action, you now have another shooter that's available. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they can make that work. How important, you know, we talk a lot about Herb Jones' defense, and it's well-deserved because he is a menace, madman, whatever you want to call him. This man is getting deflections on side out of bounds plays. Yes. This is not a thing you're supposed to be able to do in the league. How important is this stretch for him offensively? We've seen him kind of grow as an initiator sometimes, bringing it up. But having an Ingram, having a CJ, and being spaced, how important are these reps for him to improve as a shooter, improve as a driver, improve as a cutter, kind of take these reps?
It's huge. Like, I think this has to be the base for him. And being able to play off of three different pressure points, I think it simplifies the decisions for him. If they're going to help off this far, cool. I'm just going to shoot. I'm going to get these reps to get my jumper down. Like, the work. The jumper he's displaying now is not the one that we saw in college. I'll put it that way. And so for him to already be further ahead than expected is a positive. The defense brought him to the dance in terms of the minutes that he's earning. And so, like, the learning curve seems to be accelerated for him in that regard. And then you add on the off-ball instincts, the way that he's able to cut, the way he doesn't mind setting pin-in screens if a corner loops around. Like, he is so smart. That also gives him more leeway to be on the floor. So if he does have a 1-for-4, 1-for-5 night from three, it almost doesn't matter because the defense is impactful enough to have him out there. And if the shot isn't falling because of the way that he can cut, his willingness to screen, the decisions that he makes as a secondary ball handler, whenever the ball does swing to him, he'll keep the chain moving. Like, he has ways to impact the offense even if the shot isn't falling. And that's why I'm pretty confident of long-term. Like, I think that's – I'm not super worried about him at this point.
Yeah, I think it's a great runway for him. It reminds me a little bit of – maybe what we've seen from Matisse as far as the reps you get paying off later. So the efforts that he made cutting early in the season really have more value now. Mm-hmm. And he had kind of space to learn and grow when to cut, how do I do this? And so Herb can kind of take those moves where he's in transition, gets a kick, drives, maybe shoots it, maybe he kicks, maybe pulls it and shoots from three, or maybe he drives. And now that will help him pay off later down the road. So I thought that's been a good set for him. Brandon Ingram's been really good.
Yes. And
we've been saying that for the majority of the season. I think I'm more on board the more I watch the Pelicans with what he's doing. And every time I watch Ingram now, it's the little things that he's doing that he wasn't doing before. The things that you'll point out and people will be like, well, he's been doing that. Yes, he's been capable of doing that, but he's doing it regularly now.
Yeah.
And we're talking about just really dipping his toes into reading defenses and bending defenses and seeing coverages and reacting to coverages, having the ball, holding it, not waiting for the screen. I mean, not coming off the screen, waiting, knowing, hey, you're going to keep me on the side and try and ice this pick and roll. I'm going to take two dribbles to the left, hit JB in the pocket. Or I know you're going to come. I'm going to reach out this pick and roll, get your big going. Now I'm hitting JV. Like those little plays, those kind of reads where I understand what you're trying to do. I'm not going to let you do it. That's been impressive. He was a guy who felt like pull up or bust for me for a while. And it doesn't feel like that. And he still has the pull up with the ability to also drive with more force this season. So it's been a pretty complete campaign. So I think I've went ahead and bought my ticket on the Ingram Express.
I can't say I blame you. I cannot say I blame you. Like it's been fun watching him go from reactive to proactive offensively. As you said, he's reading things. Like he's manipulating the third defender in pick and roll now, doing it consistently. because even going back to last year, that felt like that was a thing he was doing when he was already rolling, to your credit, being pull up heavy. If the jumper's going, okay, I already know I'm going to get extra attention. Now let's see if I can string this out. Now it's like he's going into the game. It's like, all right, what are they doing? Let me get these other guys involved, or let me get myself going because I'm reading these defenses quicker, easier, in a smarter way. Now it's easier for me to find my flow because I know what I want to do, what spots I want to get to, what cracks are going to be open, and what that is going to open up for everyone else. This has been a really fun Brandon Ingram year. Are they the most dangerous play-in team to you?
In the West or overall?
In the West.
Dangerous is an interesting word. The most dangerous, and I know, if we're using the word dangerous, I'm probably still going to go Lakers. They still have LeBron James and or possibly Anthony Davis, and that's still dangerous to a degree. So I can't say that they would be the most annoying play-in team. That's the Clippers. Mm-hmm. They're just going to be annoying if they get in. I would say they would probably be the most, I'm trying to look for a word
to describe it. Are they the best play-in team?
I might go there. Just because that's a lot to deal with. And this is a confident bunch right now. Mm-hmm. And the only issue would probably be the fact that they're 10 and not like 8. Mm-hmm. So like if they could get to the 7 seed, then I think we're cooking some jambalaya. Huh? No? Okay.
Okay. I'll let you have it. Can I ask you a question that may annoy you?
Yeah.
Rank the coaches in the play-in.
Power rank them?
Yes.
Finch is 4. Willie Green is 3. Vogel 2. Ty Lue 1.
Okay. I just want to see where you were.
No, Willie Green can coach, though. Put some respect on his name. Let coaches figure themselves out, please. Give them an opportunity. Look at what Ime Udoka and Willie Green have done as this season has progressed. Let coaches coach.
The hashtag is big coach.
Yeah, just let it happen. Let them progress. Let them find their way. Let them figure out their roster. Let them blend what they want to do with what their team can do. Like, no one that, like, it's a rarity that people understand. That's a difficult thing. You could sit in a coach's meeting and have 45 minutes of great ideas that everyone would love, and then you go and none of it works. And you can't just put your hands up and say, well, none of that worked. I'm not going to go on a rant. I'm not doing it today.
I mean, the floor is open.
Is CJ McCollum the best shooter that consistently just gets drop coverage?
Probably.
It boggles my mind. I'm like, what do y'all expect for him to do? Like, not that he can't, but you also know what he can do. I'm just like, why are you so far back? Rudy Gobert.
Ah, there it is. Is that where you're leaving it? Just want to make sure.
I didn't hear anything. Earphones.
I see. Did you have a team you wanted to shout?
Nah, not really. I thought it was a good weekend of basketball. I mean, I guess we could send a salute to Boston again.
Woo!
Their progression on both ends of the floor. I mean, defensively, they're just so active. The switching element, the help defense. Offensively, they're able to bend some things, a little bit more movement, a little bit more activity, a little bit more purpose. Salute to Al Horford for all the work he had to do last week. This man had to switch on to what? Trae Young, Ja Morant, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. Marcus Smart initiating is fun. gives them a little bit more of a flow. Peyton Pritchard hitting shots again. So I've enjoyed what Boston's done, but it's playoff time. You know, the teams we know are the teams we know, and the teams we don't, you got to go.
Yes. I was going to say, if you don't have much time to figure out, that's a lot. We can go that way too, I suppose. Oh, goodness. Quick hat tip to Miami. Completely blew it against Milwaukee. Responds with a win against Brooklyn. They beat Philly on the second night of a back-to-back. Beat Houston tonight. Have a little bit of a cushion at the top of the East.
Oh, man. Miami's a one turnover away from you doing a complete victory lap. You and Perk.
It's funny. Shout out to Jimmy Butler for having a good offense tonight. It's been a minute.
Is this a preview for the playoffs with you and Jimmy Butler?
Depends on which Jimmy Butler we see. That is entirely up to him. I think that's the best way for me to put it. Oh, goodness. All right. Teams that make you go, I would like to nominate Philly very quickly. In the midst of a win streak. So not a negative thing, just a question mark that I had. Because we brought them up early on as they started with 3-0, beat the Knicks twice, beat the Timberwolves. And I was like, okay, like I want to see what this looks like against better competition. And so we see them against Cleveland, we see them against Miami. I think you saw them against Chicago. I haven't seen that game yet.
I saw pieces of the Chicago game. I saw pieces of the Cleveland game. I did not count the Miami game.
Yeah, the Miami game felt like a wash to me with no Harden, but I did want to see like some scheme stuff to see what potential answers would be. I guess my first question to you, you said you've seen pieces of the Cleveland game. How did you feel about their zone offense?
How did you feel about their zone offense?
I was a little iffy on it. It's less about the design for me, more so because Joel Embiid could just flow around the mid-range, like in theory. Like he's there, he can just find a soft part of the zone, sprinkle in free throw line jumpers or just pummel dudes underneath. My question is like, okay, can they get him the ball consistently and can they do it in a timely manner?
Well, that's a question, zone or man.
Yeah. In the zone, especially Cleveland zone, because you have Evan freaking Mobley up top, and they just have a bunch of length that can condense. And even if they get it into him, then you have, if he's posting up Jared Allen, Lauri Markkanen can drop down from the corner because whoever was, quote unquote, defending Matisse Thybulle or Shake Milton, they were just roaming around. So I'm just like, okay, with this kind of length, with this kind of activity, how's this going to look? And it felt like James Harden was really the only guy that could comfortably make entry passes. I'm just like, huh. I wonder if that's going to be a problem. And so that's where I want to see where you were in terms of the Cleveland game or just where they were overall.
I mean, post-entry passing has been a problem for them all year. Mm-hmm. I mean, to the point where I'll even point to the Chicago game. They had great old-school design, 4 out, 1 in. No one is in the opposite side corner, so good luck if you want to help. And Yang is literally staring at Joel Embiid as he's fronting and then is shocked when the ball's deflected. It's like, y'all did all this work and all this setup and didn't get it. Now, eventually they did start to get it, and I think it's going to be important because if they can get the post-entry passing down and if you can continue to find ways to create space for Embiid, and he can do his work early and seal, it's tough. But we've seen them have these games against zone where they literally forget how to throw the ball to Joel Embiid. Mm-hmm. I mean, my mind still goes to the game against Dallas where the design was there, but the execution wasn't, and they just stopped looking at him. And then this man just started coming to the perimeter because he was like, please give me the ball.
Hashtag, I'll do it myself.
Yeah, pretty much. So it's, to me, it's... And also, it's who all would zone them for me. you know, who would they run into that would really hit them with that outside of probably think of two teams?
Like Cleveland would, Miami absolutely would. And then, because Philly's two right now. I mean, well, yeah, Philly's two right now. So technically they could face Toronto.
Who also would.
Yeah.
And they could face Charlotte, who also would.
Yeah. I don't know how that would go, but they definitely throw it in. Hey, man, I'm curious about Charlotte's defense and high leverage moments. You know this. I've said this on the pod before. This isn't a surprise.
It was still funny. Charlotte's defense has you buzzing. I'm not too concerned with it. I think Philly has shown what they needed to show in this stretch, to me at least. We've got actual James Harden, who, reminder folks, actually very good.
Mm-hmm.
Some people disagreed, but you know. Spooky minutes.
Spooky minutes.
Tyrese Maxey has just blossomed. He's like, hey, those reps were great as a point guard. I can still do that a little bit, but now I can just do stuff. And so he just goes out there and does stuff. And I think defensively, they've held their own. Do you feel better about Philly now than you did a week after the trade?
I do feel better about Philly. I do. They are very good. Especially if we're getting the engaged version of James Harden.
Oh, now it's the engaged version of James Harden.
Yeah. What do you mean? You say that like that's new. I'm
not doing this with you.
What do you mean? I feel like I've been clear on my Harden criticism.
Crystal.
All right, then. He is putting forth effort.
Now he's a little different. The pick and roll with Niang when the bench unit is there, attacking switches again, which we haven't seen in a while.
Mm-hmm.
The lulling to sleep a little bit quicker, turning the corner a little bit quicker, attacking drops a little bit quicker, step back a little bit quicker. It all looks a little different. Yeah. Oh, well, nope.
Now, why am I getting shut down for this? What is this?
I know the trap's coming. You just got to swing the ball. Cut to the corner.
Oh, goodness. You got it. I will say one funky thing that I've been keeping tabs on. Like, does it matter super much for me in terms of the Miami game? But it has been something that's kind of been sprinkled in throughout this stretch. What are your thoughts on Joel in the deep drop? It feels like he hasn't been playing as high up as he was earlier this season.
I don't dislike it. It depends on what the purpose is. If you're trying to give a certain thing up, I think his most engaged coverage is starting at the level and then dropping back. Just to give you the best of both worlds. I think the deep drop for him just gives up too much. And depending on who's navigating the screen, it's going to be an adventure. So I get it, but I also would rather see the mix. I think Embiid has a little bit more versatility defensively than most, at least as far as his IQ and ability to mix in different things. Even if he's not really coming to the level, he might start up there and then drop back. So it's just probably the engagement level for me there. What are your thoughts?
Okay. That's disengaged for me. That's why, like, the Miami game was, like, the most egregious is too strong of a word, but I don't feel like thinking of a better word right now, was the most egregious example of him in the super deep drop, because early in that game, Miami's just, like, spamming Duncan Robinson actions at that point, and he's able to flow into whatever. He was not hot in that game, so it didn't hurt Philly, but it's just like, huh, I wonder what this is. I didn't put too much stock into that game in particular because it was the second night of a back-to-back. So I wasn't expecting flying around Joel Embiid anyway. But again, like, I've seen some deep drop in the Knicks games. And so I've just kind of, this is one of the things I'm keeping tabs on. And so I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Like, I didn't know if that was just going to be a, okay, this is a personnel thing. This is a, Joel doesn't really feel like into the fourth thing. or what it was.
I mean, it may have been that was the second night of a back-to-back too, right?
Yeah.
It may have been a we need a lot from you game. Go ahead and chill. Who knows? I don't know. Can someone explain to me what the Toronto Raptors are?
I
want to like this team so badly.
Mm-hmm.
I watched both of those Brooklyn games, and then they followed up losing to Detroit at home, losing to Orlando, and then losing at Cleveland. What are they? Why can't they like do the thing consistently? Why do they overhelp all the time defensively?
They have a lot of athleticism, a lot of length, and so a lot of ground coverage. They feel like they can pressure teams and then fly back out there.
But then they don't. You got Orlando picking you apart in pick and roll.
Yeah, that's a problem.
You got Gary Harris looking like it's, what year was that, 2016?
2018?
19, one of those years.
The 18-point a game year?
Yeah, that one. Everyone knows that one.
27? I want to say 17, 18, I think is what it was. You can continue your point. I'm going to look that up now.
That's just, it's disappointing. The East play-in is either, it alternates between very exciting and then very question marky, because Brooklyn, Atlanta as a first game? Really?
Hey, man. There might be a problem.
Does Brooklyn secretly want to be 10? Like, I know they can't play in that and they don't want to, but like, you know.
It was a 17-18 year, by the way. Yeah, because I mean, you put them at 10, they'd be the road team for both. Well, I guess in theory, they could be the road team for both. They would be road team against Atlanta if they slid to 10. But if Charlotte beats Toronto, then they're stuck either way in terms of the redacted problem. So
they're a weird team too. Kevin Durant makes a lot of things make sense though. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, that's true. I'll shoot Toronto a little bit of bail since they've been without Fred VanVleet. Just an all-star guard.
I ain't got nothing to do with defense.
He's a really good defender. I don't know.
He is, but he ain't fixing the scheme problem. You know, Freddie's not making them over-rotate.
I tried Toronto. I don't know.
I'm sorry, Canada. I did it again.
Tough. Goodness. Where are you at on Chicago right now?
I am in an interesting place with Chicago. I have been a huge fan of what Chicago has done this season, but they've fallen to the four seed. I think I was watching the Milwaukee game and they put up a graphic where I was like, hey, Chicago hasn't beaten any of these really good teams. And I was like, huh. In the back of my head, I didn't want to ever say it out loud, but I guess I will hear on my platform. I was like, is this the advanced Orlando Magic playoff formula?
Oh, no.
You remember the Orlando Magic, Steve Clifford playoff formula where, hey, we just beat all of y'all, win a few of these ones, but continue to beat all y'all, and then, oh, poof, 8 seed. Is this like the Algebra 2 of that?
The Algebra 2. That's kind of tough. Like, I really feel for Chicago. Which I guess is another version of, I guess it's the big market version of the Cleveland problem this year, to where like they've exceeded expectations and now like the war of attrition is kind of taking them. It's taking them out to an extent because DeMar DeRozan just isn't letting them fall too far. And as well as Zach LaVine's playing, like he's playing with a knee issue right now. So that's just something to monitor as well. But it's like, man, I want to have them as like this tier two team. But that defense is a problem right now. And it's not even their fault. Like, they're just missing their best defenders. And them coming back is just, they're going to be coming back right at the playoff run.
Yeah, and their improved defense would probably help a lot of these things. They get more transition looks, wouldn't be stuck in the half court as much, and all of that. I'm going to ask a secondary question before I get to my offensive point. What does Tristan Thompson do for this team?
He keeps Tony Bradley off the floor. And I have thoughts on that, but that.
Like, I see what he's supposed to provide. And I think we see a certain level of activity, but he's also just kind of in a drop a lot, which give Tristan Thompson the respect that he's done defensively, but drop hasn't really been the
thing. That's not his thing. That's not what they brought him for.
So it's like, okay, if you're going to bring him in for rebounding and defense and you get neither of those things, it's not like the roles are there either. That's where I'm like, what do they do? It's hard because Chicago is missing the things that make them really good. So you don't want to put too much weight into this stretch, but there are question marks. And this is around the time of year where you want to at least have a sketch of the answers. So I was watching that Milwaukee game where they played. And I posed the question. We talked about it a while back on the pod. I still think Milwaukee is their best matchup as far as the top four team goes. My theory was they have DeMar, they have LaVine, they have the bucket getters to take your playoff scheme and game plan and just toss it to the side. Put it back in the folder.
Like the show sheet.
I rip that up every week. Delete Marcus spam. Comfortable if they can keep it close and get their guys to go off. Now, the issue there is, and this is something as I watched that game, I wondered. I think we've talked about what does it look like? Can Chicago consistently make the defense pay? You know, when you get defenses in rotation, whether it's your guys have it going or Vucevic is rolling and popping and defense help, can you kick it out and make enough plays, make enough shots to make it work? Secondary question that popped up. What happens if they can't force the defense to help at all? So Milwaukee's counter was, Drew, you just guard DeMar. Mm-hmm. We'll figure the rest out. And effectively, it became not just a one-on-one, but they kept the ball in front for the majority of that fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. And I was like, huh, if that's going to be the thing, then you really got a problem. And the second thing Milwaukee did was they put Giannis on Vucevic, which I thought was rude. And it's one of the times where Giannis in a drop really worked. Because basically, put Giannis in all the actions you want to run. And now it takes away all the connecting pieces that Vucevic does. Because Giannis is still in the action. And so you didn't get the same flow and movement out of those either. So, you know, Chicago's going to be at their best if they can leverage their ability to score into forcing teams to help. But if they can't get the defenders back, which I think they will, and I think that'll help overall. They won't have as much half-court weight to lift. But just something I noticed going into the postseason.
I got you. And just a quick note on the Giannis on Vucevic point. You have him on here, like there's your cross match. After a miss, and Giannis is pushing, and good luck, Vucevic trying to get matched up with that. And if it isn't Vucevic, who is the biggest body you have on the floor, good luck building your wall on a whim, and good luck keeping Giannis out of the paint at that point. So, I don't know. Like, I came into the season lower on Chicago and was proven wrong. But, like, now at this point, like, I feel like I'm low on Chicago by default because I just don't know if they're going to be healthy enough to make the run that they might be capable of. Like, I was at the mindset of like, okay, let's see just how wrong I am about this team once the postseason hits. And like, I don't even feel like we're going to get a good answer to that because again, like even if you do get Caruso and Ball back and they're supposed to, there's really not going to be a ramp up period for them. It's going to be like, hey, we need y'all for 28, 30, 32 minutes. We need y'all to get out here and force some more turnovers the way that y'all were before you got hurt, because otherwise we are just going to have a bunch of pressure on our shot makers. And they're good enough to do that. Like, DeMar's been incredible. LaVine's very good. Vucevic is very good. But like, that's just a lot of strain. And that's a tough diet to live on, especially in their first playoff run together. So
it's a tough diet to live on until it works in the playoffs. Because let me tell you, Reggie Jackson has proved that time and time again.
All roads lead to Reggie Jackson.
No, but I mean, you got the game plan and everything sounds great. It looks great until they just continue to just make buckets. But the shots you want to give up are now going in. And what do we do now? Let's double. Oh, we're opening plays up for them. This is great. That's my flip side with Chicago. Are you going to take a Middleton victory lap?
44 points on Sunday felt good. Not going to hold you. Chris Middleton is a multi-time all-star. He's an NBA champion. He should probably get some respect at some point. But, you know.
Middleton.
Oh, brother.
I'm just saying his name.
No, you know what you're doing. It's fine. we touched on it last week. Milwaukee did have a couple of marquee matchups since the Eastern Conference pod. How did you feel about their offensive process in those games?
Still not seasoned enough for me. But there is the caveat of at least there's a purpose behind it, it feels like, as opposed to we're not doing anything. It's still too slow. I think there's more creative spacing they can use. I think they can get into stuff quicker, use their guys a little bit better. But it's very clear, fourth quarter, okay, Giannis come screen for Middleton. Let's play out of it. If nothing, here, Drew, do something. But there's at least something that resembles a confidence and an understanding of what they want to accomplish. Like they have a winning time piece to them that they didn't necessarily have before. So I think there's still some things they can put on the chicken, but they're coming. They're coming.
Okay, I got you. I feel like at this point, like a bellwether for me, especially with those Chris Giannis pick and rolls, are like, okay, where is Drew Holiday? Where are they placing him? Is he in the corner? Is he in the strong side corner? Is he in the opposite corner? Is he lingering around the dunker spot? Like, where is he?
In the dunker spot.
That'll do it. And like depending on where he is, like, okay, now where is Giannis rolling? Is he rolling into traffic? Are you giving your ball handler a lane to dribble into? Or do you have Drew somewhere where his defender can help off? And so I'm watching Bucks Suns, and like their process felt pretty good for most of it. But then there were still the possessions where you have Drew kind of in, it's tough to say in the way since he's good, but like from a spacing standpoint, just kind of in the way because you're giving defenses an easy help point and you don't want to do that and basically handicap your best offensive action. So I don't know. Like I'm kind of in a weird place with it right now.
Well, the counter with Drew in the dunker spot is fine because theoretically you're making the low man a guard who likely can't stop Giannis. Mm-hmm. And if he does come up high enough to do so, Drew's wide open. The problem is it being an automatic and then leaning on it and then not mixing it and going in the other way. That's my biggest issue with it. Like you don't have to roll him to that side every time. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to go to two defenders every time. But we'll see if the Bucks can tighten that up. But Giannis is tough, man. Drew is unlocked as well. And Middleton, when he gets hot, there's not much you can do. You know, we talk about bucket getters as far as playoff goes.
Mm-hmm.
He goes and gets them. What do you do? Now, if he goes 2 for 12, the pod gets postponed.
Yep. No, we talk about it. It's fine. Just got to hope it doesn't happen that often. You know, that's it. That is it. All right. Let's move into some players that have impressed.
Give me the players you got. I did not put any down.
Oh. That's fine. It's funny because you already took one of them earlier today. I want to shout out Al Horford, who has switched more picks than all but four bigs in the NBA this season.
Ooh, I wonder who the other four are.
Well, you probably guess one.
Bam?
Bam is, yeah. Yeah.
Draymond?
You know, I can pull up the list, actually. But, man, anyway.
Incredible content. Back to Horford.
See, that was the prep earlier. I was like, let me see where he is. Because I know people aren't going to want to, you know, people aren't going to care about the actual list. But anyway, fifth most pick switched per second spectrum. He's just been solid, man. What they've asked him to do defensively as a switch big, even as a drop big when they want to do that. He's been sound defensively. Offensively, not being used as a playmaking hub as much as he used to be, but can still do that. Still has the passing chops. He's been shooting well from three since the All-Star break. Shout out to Al Horford, the ultimate gap filler. He deserves a nod. Also want to give a head nod to Christian Wood, who is averaging 21-10 since the All-Star break, shooting 46% from three on nearly five attempts. I was watching Grizzlies Rockets earlier today. Again, shout out to the Rockets for winning that game. Fun enough. But engaged Christian Wood is fun. And his skill set offensively allows him to be used in different ways, not just a pick and roll or pick and pop threat, not just a post-up threat, a guy that can come off of screens. A guy that can occasionally run a ball screen for you if you want to invert that sucker. So he's been fun on offense at the release. I still don't really like watching him on defense. Watching him in the drop is not fun. He's all hunched over and stuff. Guys can get behind him. Switch him out. Just switch with Christian Wood. That play him higher, switch him. I don't want to see him in drop anymore. He gets the Bobby Portis treatment from me. But at any rate, fun stuff for Christian Wood offensively. Last guy I had was RJ Barrett, who has been torching the net since the All-Star break, averaging 29-7-5. I like that more of the on-ball responsibility has leaned towards him. Some of that is by necessity because of who New York has had out. But more poison pick and roll, shots falling, getting downhill, getting to the free throw line. Got to make your free throws, young fella. And he's still bringing it defensively. Has a massive load on both ends of the floor right now. Deserves to be commended. Those are the guys that I had.
So the payoff to the start of the show, hashtag big apology in New York, you are the winner.
There we go. I guess I'll throw another one out there. Tyler Hero's been very good since the All-Star break. Quick shout out to Cooper Moorhead, who recently wrote a great piece on detailing some of the improvements Tyler Hero's made. Also Brady Hawk of the Five Reasons Sports Network, who's also written a great piece on some of the improvements Tyler Hero's made as a driver. As guy to create some space, getting downhill, getting to the rim a little bit more, getting to the free throw line a little bit more. We know what he does as a pull-up shooter. So he's trying to end the sixth man of the year conversation. I respect it.
Always read Coop. You said you think you got Tyler Hero locked in as a sixth man?
He's trying to lock it up. I think it's a two-man race right now.
Who's the other one?
I think it's between him and Kevin Love at this point.
Who you got?
I still lean Hero.
The hashtag is big agenda. Kendra Perkins on March 5th. I think we all agree that Tyler Hero is the sixth man of the year. 3! Carry the hell on, ..
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, let me go ahead and get the Kevin Love for sixth man of the year article ready. We'll drop that on basketballnews.com at some point this week. Anyway, let's... Before we go to the next section to close this thing out, are you sure you didn't have anyone off the top of your head?
Nope, sure didn't. Shout out to Jeff Green.
Still dunking. Shout out to Aaron Gordon, who's having a good year in Denver.
Shout out to Coach Michael Malone.
There we go. There's your head nod. All right. Get to some mailbag questions. It's been a minute. As usual, if you have mailbag questions, you don't have to wait for us to prompt you. Email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. Send them in. We'll get to them. The first one is a long one, but I feel like it was my responsibility to read this out because Andrew had some thoughts about the MVP conversation.
Oh, you brought some smoke to the fire. All right, let's go, Andrew.
He did the thing. He did the thing. I ain't gonna hold you. He says, everyone seems to be vaulting Ja Morant into the MVP conversation and making it a big four instead of the big three, the three being the obvious trio of Jokic, Embiid, and Giannis. It's also led to conversations where Luka Doncic and Ja Morant are being pitted against each other in the standard who would you rather have for the next 5 years or who would you rather build a franchise around questions, and it's starting to seem like the sentiment around NBA Twitter and the media is that they'd rather have Ja. Luka and Ja have identical scoring numbers, and Luka gets more rebounds and hands out more assists. Their advanced stats and catch-all metrics are 50-50 in favoring one or the other, although Luka is clearly the better defender. However, that could just be attributed to size and strength. Since the start of the year, Luka's at 29-10-9 versus Ja being at 34-6. Both really great, but if we're going to boost Jokic for his performance with lesser teammates and now potentially fault Embiid for having Harden in the race for MVP, then why is Ja seemingly so far ahead of Luka in these conversations when the Grizzlies lead over the Mavericks is due to them going 12-2 without Ja and Luka playing with inferior teammates than Ja? Do we just not take these into account? It just seems like Luka's being overlooked in all of these discussions about MVP when all his numbers are nearly identical. This whole thing sort of reminds me of near the beginning of the season when the Kais left Ja from his all-star team due to the Grizzlies' performance without him.
Bonus heat. You also left Luka off the all-star team as well. So,
you know, I was just setting up the MVP debate. That's all.
Look, all right. So apparently every time we already passed Groundhog's Day, or have we? I don't know how it works.
I think so.
Every spring we hit a stretch. I have a lot of fun with the MVP discussion up until this point. And this is where apparently more people just enter the chat and it just becomes a lot of loud noise. So if Luka was having or playing with the stretch that he has post-trade, even a little bit pre-trade, he probably would be in the discussion. But it's too late. The doors have closed. All the tables are bought. You got to stand in general. If you can get in the club, maybe, but you are in line.
I see.
And that's no disrespect to what Luka's doing because he's been incredible for Dallas. He's been a huge part. They made this trade for him to maximize his talents. You see his usage has gone up. They're on a streak. They found an identity, and that's fantastic. Ja Morant has been incredible this season. And Memphis, he also gets the bonus of Memphis being much better than people expected. And that's going to be a perception bump. If you're a guard and you lead the league in points in the paint and you have these outstanding performances, 99, I think he would have 20 points in 20 plus straight games, something like that. It's just going to jump off the page a little bit more. Fair or unfair? What was his question? Was he just mad?
Yes. It's kind of okay. I think the general question is like, why is Ja getting more MVP hype than Luka? And he feels like Luka, if he's not just better, he's at least having as good of, if not a better season than Ja individually.
Well, I think that Luka just came on too late, in my opinion.
Okay.
I think he came on too late. He's behind too many guys. If you're top five, which seems to be the consensus all of a sudden, Jokic, Embiid, Giannis, Ja, DeMar, he's probably on the back half fighting who? LeBron? Who else? I have no one's in the back half of the MVP discussion anymore.
This is those everyone three, and then you have like Ja, Luka, DeMar kind of in a group, LeBron in another group.
Yeah, but see, I don't even think Luka's gotten past DeMar. You know, that's no disrespect to the season that he's had or what he's put up. It's just once the race gets going, it's hard to catch up in the MVP race.
Are you ready for the Jason Tatum version of this question in a couple of weeks?
Oh, that's not going to happen, is it?
I mean, have you seen his numbers post? Boston has just been the best team in the East in 2022.
You're not going to go from slandering Jason Tatum for three straight months to...
I'm not going to make the Jason Tatum.
Okay,
I'm saying if you're saying Luka came on too late, in spite of this ridiculous stretch, I mean, Boston is now at 5. They are 2 games out of the 2 seed right now. Jason Tatum's heating up. He just had a huge game on a during a marquee matchup. We're going to get some momentum at some point. So that's, I'm just prepping you.
Inferior teammates than Ja. I don't know if I go there. I don't know if we take that into account. Like, for Luka to get back in, Dallas would have to have Memphis's record, fair or unfair, right?
Mm-hmm. And they are, what, 4 games behind Memphis right now.
So, yeah, I don't know if I answered your question, Andrew. I'm sorry. But I like the energy.
He came with it. He came with it. We have a few questions from Noah. But I will start with this one since we're already talking about Ja Luka. One of his questions was, who will win MVP first, Ja Morant or Luka Doncic?
That's a good question. I'm going to go with Luka.
Okay.
I don't know how good I feel about that. I'm going to go back to Ja.
There we go.
Ja and Luka is going to be my new Jokic and Embiid. Also, can we ban all who would you rather have for the next 5 years?
Oh, where's the fun in that?
Conversations. All right, well, I'm just going to flip it to just really old veterans from now on.
Who would you rather have for the next 5 years?
LaMarcus Aldridge or DeAndre Jordan?
Yuck.
Carmelo Anthony or Kevin Love? Russell Westbrook or John Wall?
I don't like any of these.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do. That's what I'm going to do to unpopularize this meme.
See, the whole next 5 years thing is projecting forward with, like, young guys, potential and stuff. What, you know, which guy do you want to have for the next 5 veteran minimum contracts that hit the same?
Oh, no, I'm going to do it with Josh Hart or Malik Monk.
See, I can rock with this. This is fun. This is. You thought it was going to be one way. However, it's actually the other way. To answer the question.
I was sending him right to the screen. He rejected. What can I do?
We're reading ice. Okay. I probably lean Luka. I don't feel good about that either.
Well, no, my initial lean with Luka was because, you know, if the step back is going, Dallas is playing well, it's going to jump off. If he plays like this over a course of a year, he's going to get the discourse. But also, if Ja, like, improves and, like, the jump shot takes another step while he's still doing the driving, I don't know what to do with that. That's why I went back to Ja.
I got you. Like, I feel like... I think zooming out, like, I think Luka is better than Ja. I also think, one, that isn't super definitive at this point, which is a testament to how good Ja Morant is. And two, since the narrative and perception does matter, the fact that Ja is just the most fun dude in the NBA, I think that's going to help in this regard. He's also just hilarious. Great for post-game. Like, the culture that's been built in Memphis, like, that's him. And so I think with Luka, it's just going to be, I think it'll have to be an overwhelmingly basketball argument, which it kind of should be anyway. But I think Ja has that working for him. And even as good as Luka is, like, it is heliocentric basketball. And people got burnt out with that with James Harden. And so, like, I feel like there's going to have to be a window. Unless Dallas makes a move and then they just become the best team in the West next season or something and puts them on that kind of stretch. Like, I think a lot of things will have to break right for Luka.
The winning element and the consistency season long would probably
That would help.
Could push him towards that, in my opinion.
Yeah, come in the season in shape. That would be a positive towards the MVP.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he said that. Echoing his sentiments, I don't know.
This man called him Luka Doncic.
That's all right. Let's move. All right. Again, Noah had a few questions for us. This was my favorite one out of the bunch. He says, I recently discovered that I am a Tyrese Halliburton hater. I thought I was appropriately respectful of him and his talents, but in a conversation with friends, not Kings or Pacers fans, they were almost unanimous that he was likely to one day make an All-NBA team. Is the consensus on him just way higher than I thought? Is he likely to have a season where he's better than Ja, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Trae Young, Luka Doncic, LaMelo Ball, or Darius Garland? Not to mention the mid-20s generational guards. If you had to pin it down, how many All-Star and All-NBA selections does he end up with? I can't say this is my first time being a hater, but it's the first time I've been one unintentionally.
Ooh, this is definitely your ministry.
Oh, goodness. As for the first part of this, is the consensus just higher than you expected? Probably, like, a lot of people, like, I was upset that the Kings traded Tyrese Halliburton. Like, I just didn't think that was a thing they should have done for the level of star that Domantas Sabonis is. Like, I think you got to go tier. We're not doing that podcast, though. So I think, in general, like, it's not a surprise to me that people feel like he has, like, all NBA potential. I don't know if I see, like, perennial all NBA for him. And as Noah mentioned in the question, like, there are a lot of guards that he's going to have to face. I do say, how many All-Star appearances? Like, I'd say at least 3, because he's got the rest of the rookie contract. He's going to get an extension. I don't think he's going to be traded for anyone. Like, I'd say at least 3 All-Star appearances for him. All NBA is a little bit tough because I just don't know how good Indiana's going to be. Because it's going to take his individual brilliance plus into being a playoff mainstay for him to get, like, all NBA votes, I think. But multi-time All-Star, I can absolutely see.
How does he become a top 5 point guard in the East?
I mean, the playmaking's there. I believe in the shot. Like, honestly, I think it's just going to come down to him being a more aggressive scorer.
Can he get to a top 5 guard in the East where you have Kyrie, Trae Young, LaMelo, Fred VanVleet, Garland, Drew? Do we count James Harden?
We can count Harden, yeah. Does he eventually get to?
Does he crack that?
I think he can. I think it's a few years out.
Or is he going to be 8 shots in 37 minutes while Malcolm Brogdon takes 23?
You know, again, he has to be a more aggressive scorer. You know, you can't have those. And, like, they're just pockets. This is something that we brought up on the pod, that I brought up on the pod before. Where, like, he'll come off a pick and roll, get to the free throw line. He's me looking for the kick out instead of taking an extra dribble, really engaging the big, or just looking for his own shot. Like, he has a floater and he's really good at disguising that floater with lobs if he can engage the big. So, like, it doesn't take much. That's why I'm so high on him. He's already good. And though progress isn't always linear, it does feel like there's some low hanging fruit for him to grab, for him to take that next step offensively.
All right.
So I can see it. All right. Let's roll through the rest of Noah's questions very quickly. Given their age trajectories, which season will be the first one in which Trae Young is better than Steph Curry?
I looked up. It says Steph Curry has averaged 39-5-4 in all games against Trae Young in his career. So according to Steph Curry, the answer is going to be never.
I respect that. But Steph's what, 32, 33 right now? I think Trae can pass him. Say the 23-24 season.
All right, we're going to mark that down. And when you are hashtag big timing it up. I'm going to send you this clip. Won't get a reply at that time, but we're going to remember that.
Oh, brother. All right. Oh, circling back up to our earlier conversation. Who would you pick in a Heat Sixers series?
That's a tough one. See, that's where I would have liked to see Harden in that game.
Yeah.
Because Harden-less Sixers, I go Heat pretty easily. That activity, ability to double Embiid, make things interesting. With Harden, that becomes, you know, are they going to switch? What are they going to do scheme-wise? They might be one of the teams that might feel the most comfortable switching against the Embiid-Harden pick and roll. Mm-hmm. Neither fronting or doubling their way out of it. Heat and six.
Okay. I think I also lean Miami. Mostly, my big question, and I echo your sentiments, like I wish you could have got one, Harden in the game. Two, I would like to have seen Philly not being on the second night of a back-to-back. Like, I just would have wanted to see that as a matchup, period. But my question is, like, who is Philadelphia closing with? It's kind of where I go. Because, to your point, like, I do think Miami's going to be pretty comfortable. Like, I think, and I tweeted this out on Saturday, because PJ Tucker was defending Tyrese Maxey. And obviously, you have Bam on the beat. So they were just switching that pick and roll whenever it happened. And I was like, okay, if this is what they're doing with PJ in this game with no Harden, like, my assumption is that we're going to get that PJ Tucker is just going to get the Harden assignment. And they're just going to switch that all the time. And so from there, it's just like, okay, can Matisse Thybulle make him pay enough off the ball? Because he's going to be the guy that they double off of. If they are going to switch and in front, they are going to fly off of wherever Matisse Thybulle is. They can send help that way. And so can Matisse make enough shots? Can he dice them up with cuts and then make the plays necessary after that to make Miami second guess that? Because if you got
Matisse as the X factor.
I think he is. Because if he can't do that, I mean, Miami's defense is incredible. If he can't do that, then you have to close with someone else. And if you have to close with someone else, as many questions as I have right now about Miami's late game offense, particularly Jimmy Butler, if you can't put Matisse on him, like, I think Jimmy Butler can find someone to pick on in the post. And so that's kind of where I'm like, I probably lean Miami right now. I do think their depth is better. Like, I do think they have the coaching edge. I'd probably go Heat 7. But that's where I'm at today. I want to see more from Philly, and obviously I want to see more from Miami, but that's where I'm at as of today.
Okay.
All right. This question is from Ian. It says, rank these players. Isaiah Roby, Chimezie Metu, Zeke Nnaji.
Roby 3, Nnaji 2, Metu 1.
Okay. I went Nnaji 1, Metu 2, and Roby 3. Sorry, Isaiah Roby. I'm intrigued by Zeke Nnaji. I'm glad he can. The jumper intrigues me. All right. This one is from David, who asks, what are some of the unpopular player islands that you still hold real estate in?
Carmelo Anthony. Being heard of, I mean, pretty much insert any veteran in the equation. Those are pretty much the unpopular ones I got. What about you, man?
The Chris's, you know, Chris Paul, Chris Middleton. Still a believer in Justice Winslow. I don't even know if that's unpopular at this point, more than it's just like off the beaten path. But I do still very much believe in Justice Winslow. Who else do we have on the list? I want to make sure I'm not forgetting anyone big. I have a lot of fringe guys that I root for, but I don't know if any of them are unpopular. Honestly, Chris Paul is probably the one.
Okay.
People just hate on the guy. It's crazy. Yeah.
That's fair. Does James Harden count?
I mean, ironically, yeah.
I think CJ McCollum's a really good basketball player. Does that count? I don't think he gets his just due. I don't think Julius Randle's terrible. I think Russell Westbrook still has a home in the league. I'm getting the hang of this question the deeper we go into it. Right,
there we go. Hitting your rhythm.
And you know, it's like a 3-point contest.
Hit the money ball, Rick.
Get the first rack out of the way.
There we go.
I think Reggie Jackson deserves respect at all times. The question was unpopular player island. Like the island just isn't popular. What's the hipster island these days?
I don't know. Because like my interpretation of the question is like just people that don't believe anymore don't like the player. And you're like, hey, actually, this guy's good. That's why I feel like Chris Paul is my best answer.
That's a good one. There has to be. I'm trying to look and see if there's someone else we can throw on here. No, I'm trying to see, like, is Sabonis count? Or is he just certified good? It's a good question.
Rudy Gobert is probably an answer for me. He's really good. Has his warts, but he's really good.
What are the warts?
Oh, goodness. What are the warts? Well, you know, he doesn't shoot threes. You know, he's not a great passer. Doesn't do much off the dribble. You know, the post-ups can be an adventure sometimes. Defensively, you know, do you want him 30 feet from the hoop? Not really. Like, he can do it. Not his ideal role. Get into his body a little bit. Does that do it for you?
Yeah. Yeah, that does it for me all right.
Oh, good. I think within the context of this podcast, I think the Oklahoma City Thunder as a concept is probably my answer. So you just call everyone mid?
Trey Mann's really good.
Okay.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is really good too, man.
Averaging north of 30 since the All-Star break. He's doing the thing.
They've got some players. They are just competitive enough.
Goodness. You know what I want to do? Like at some point before the season ends, like I just want to do a pod on just the bottom of the league in terms of records.
Well, folks, we found the shortest episode in Dunker Spot history.
Wow. What is this?
You know what? I'm gonna kick free throws off with a question because I have a couple. Okay. This is my segment. You keep taking my baby away from me.
Oh. All right, do you think?
What's the one team right now? And we won't say that you don't watch or you can't watch, but the one team that they're going to have to show me what happened, or I need to know what happened before I turn this on.
I think my answer generally is Washington.
Kyle Kuzma's breakout season does nothing for you, huh? No, Porzingis doesn't move you?
Shout out to the Porzingis debut. Actually looked pretty solid. But no, like that's the one where I'm just like, okay. Especially as we're getting to these days. It's like, all right. I already have one or two that I want to watch for sure. that third one, you need, I need to have a reason for it, this to be my choice before I dig into it. Or at the very least, give me a player or two that I need to look at some clips on. And so watch, like, Kuzma's breakout has been very good. It has to be Kuzma and something. So Porzingis helps, especially early on. I want to see how he's fitting again and stuff. But like generally, Washington is like, all right.
It's Orlando for me right now.
It's Orlando. Okay. Why Orlando? Like
I just need to see why or how this happened. I'm just going to blame the other team, which isn't fair to you. I just can't do it right now with the Magic. The Knicks just make me mad at this point. I know exactly what I'm about to watch when I turn that on. Oh, they're playing well. Oh, the third quarter happened. Oh, they're not playing well. Those are my two.
All right, fair enough.
Is the answer Cam Johnson?
Is that that's the whole question?
That's the whole question.
Is the answer Cam Johnson? If this is a positive thing, probably, yeah. Cam's good. Called game against the Knicks. How about it?
He's had a really good stretch. Do you know Denver's record in the 13 games DeMarcus Cousins has played in for them?
See what? I feel like I just saw this on the graph. 10-3?
12-1.
All right, there we go. The savior. Back with Michael Malone.
Coach Michael Malone. Come on now.
Okay, Coach Michael Malone, my apologies.
Did you know Memphis is 11-0 when they have the 30 plus assists? And they're 20-0 when they have 28 and plus assists.
I did not know that.
Now you do.
All right.
So you can enjoy their half court flow a little bit more. How does Kevin Durant keep doing it?
I don't think Kevin Durant has seen a defender since 2007. That would be my answer.
It's Tony Allen slander. Won't be allowed. Better 4-5 series, Chicago, Boston, or Utah, Dallas?
Utah, Dallas, I think is where I go.
I'm kind of ready to see some Chicago, Boston. They've got just enough talent, just enough questions to make that an interesting little 7-game series. What's your least favorite part of NBA offense?
I probably lean to the other section if we're referencing the poll.
Oh, what was your answer?
I hate bad screens. I hate it. Okay. Make contact. Do the thing.
I got you.
I'll just say I was dropping on Tuesday. Yeah, I asked the question for a reason, I guess is the best way for me to phrase that.
Ooh, a tease. Check it out on basketballnews.com later this week. I got some players for you.
Oh, no.
We are back. Still don't have a name for this, but it's fine. We'll figure it out. DeAndre Hunter or Jay Crowder?
Hunter.
Chetty Osmond or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope?
I'll go KCP.
Malachi Flynn or Bones Highland?
Oh, God. Gonna have Eric come after me. Jesus. I don't. Bones.
Bruce Brown or Dorian Finney-Smith?
Dorian Finney-Smith.
That was very quick. Malik Monk or Emmanuel Quickley?
You've been waiting on this one. I see. I'll take Quickley.
Trey Mann or Jalen Noel?
Team Young Bucket Getter. I see. Give me Trey Mann.
Killian Hayes or Théo Maledon?
This is evil. Jesus Christ. Killian Hayes.
Danilo Gallinari or DeMarcus Cousins?
Hashtag old and musty. I see. I'll take Gallo.
Reggie Jackson or D'Angelo Russell?
I'm taking D'Lo.
Wow. Jordan Poole or Bogdanovich?
Which one?
Either. It's a triple threat match.
I respect it. What role is Jordan Poole in?
Just Jordan Poole.
Ah, I see. Give me the Bogdanoviches.
It's very weird. Jordan Poole's had a very reverse season. It's not supposed to go that way. When you usually come out the gates, you usually stay out the gates, even if you don't play well. But he kind of like reversed back to... Anyways. Al Horford or Bobby Portis?
Horford.
How did you feel when you and others stated LeBron James maybe should hit the big red button and not play, and then he dropped 56 points?
Told me wrong, I guess. We'll see where we're in a week and a half. He did not play against the San Antonio Spurs tonight. What was the score?
What do you have? Extreme knee soreness?
I have no idea. 26-10-8 with 3 steals and a block for all-star guard DeJounte Murray in the game, by the way.
Who's been the best team in basketball in the year of 2022?
Probably Boston.
The hashtag is Big Agenda, folks. Kendrick Perkins tweeted, the Celtics has been the best team in basketball over the last 2 months. Yes, they are legit title contenders. 3 exclamation points. Carry the hell on, ..
Wonderful. Wonderful. Did you feel good about that one?
Really good. It wasn't an expected one. I got the one I was looking for earlier, but it's time you got to draw the same play up, see if you can get a second option out of it.
I see.
What's wrong with Big Baby?
How much time you got?
Not much. Thanks again for listening to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are on all podcast platforms. Apple, Google, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you find your podcasts. You can find me on Twitter at NakaiasNBA. You can find him on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, what's the word? What'd you say? Adios?
We'll catch you. Oh, Jesus. Do we believe in the Utah Jazz at this point?